Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Well, Matt, our listenership continues to grow, and I'm happy to announce that along with iTunes, Stitcher, and Google+, our shows can be heard on Facebook, YouTube, and other social media sites.
Yeah, Alan, we are so thankful that more people have really started to listen into our program, and we hope to continue to bring thoughtful, meaningful content to the world. For those faithful fans of the show, we appreciate your continual support and for sending in questions and comments. Thank you so much.
And listeners, if you see one of our posts and you like it, please share it with others and continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain.
While bringing answers and options to making your lives happier, healthier, and more successful.
Now, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
We will introduce you to talented authors and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and fun for you and your family.
Now, with our experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. And Matt, here we are back together in the studio, and I've got to tell you, you look very relaxed, happy, and yet peaceful.
Alan, I am relaxed and have really, really tried to focus on some of the wonderful tools, techniques, and advice from the experts that we've had on our show. I really, truly enjoy continuing to learn and grow as a person.
Then, along with our listeners, you're in for a treat. We have another wonderful guest today whose fascinating background and wonderful contributions to our world gives a unique perspective on living a healthy and happy life.
That's right, Alan. Today on the show, we welcome in Eric Walbenstein. Those that know him get to call him E.
Well, then I'm going to take the liberty. E is a former U.S. Army officer who has spent the past two decades helping people live a happier, more fulfilling life through the use of yoga and mindfulness.
Among many of his accomplishments, he most recently wrote the book Waging Inner Peace, in which he analyzed how 5,000 hard-changing U.S. military veterans came to use yoga's ancient science of mind to heal from the stresses induced by the horrors of war.
The book also reviews E's highly effective bootstrap system, which is one of the world's most comprehensive mind-body solutions for calming and rebalancing the nervous system for happy and relaxed living, something we all could utilize and benefit from. We are very excited to welcome Eric to Answers for the Family.
Well, thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is great to have you.
You know, E, when I think of a yoga master in my mind, I think of Eastern medicine, and the first picture that comes to mind, it's not necessarily a U.S. Army soldier.
You're not the first one to tell me that. And you know, the funny thing is that if you would have asked me some 30 years ago when I first joined the military that I would be doing what I'm doing now with yoga and mindfulness and meditation, I would have kind of rolled my eyes and walked the other direction. So, yeah, it's been a crazy journey.
All right. Well, you know, we did some background, and as we were looking through some of the work that you've done, and one of the main themes of your workshop seems to be focused on stress. But being from the mental health field, you know, we try to objectively measure it and understand it through science. But, you know, you take a much more holistic approach. Tell us about that.
Well, one of the things that that really steered me in this direction is a chronic stress injury that actually I had when I was 17 years old, and that plagued me for a good 15 years before I really figured out what was going on. And that was what really made me curious about kind of what was going on under the hood of this body-mind of mine, and really kind of investigate and experiment from a first-hand perspective on how if some of these ancient mind-body technologies, and I use that word rather intentionally, can be used to interrupt the internal processes through which stress depends. And so it was really my own investigatory process that really started me down this road.
And when you use the words, you know, mind body and all that, and you said you had said it intentionally, will you expand on that a little bit so we can understand what you mean?
Well, sure. Now, the interesting thing is, and I think everybody is getting this these days, is that Western medicine is beginning to come around to this idea that there is an actual mind body connection. And the thing that always makes me chuckle about that a little bit is that there really isn't a mind-body connection, because the mind and the body are one thing. They're part of one system. And we don't oftentimes see, you know, bodies walking down the street without minds, although there's a couple people that come to mind, or minds walking down the street without bodies. And so it's really one system. And the trick here from the yogic perspective is to figure out how to leverage certain aspects of our physiology and our psychology in order to normalize out-of-control processes and reactions.
Now, E, why do you think it has taken so long for our country to come on board?
Well, I think that for a long time, and it's still true to some extent, is that the teachers of meditation and teachers of mindfulness and yoga come from a perspective in which they're overly focused on the technique, but really haven't described how the technique works on our neurology and our biology. So as a result, it sounds like there's some, and oftentimes there are, some brash and unrealistic claims about what these practices can do. And as a result, I think a lot of people will, especially people who are trained in bona fide medical backgrounds, have a tendency to be a little bit reluctant to believe these claims, because they really aren't adequately addressed in any kind of specific way.
Now,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say is that when we can begin to talk a little bit more specifically about how, you know, for instance, standing around in funny shapes actually works on the nervous system to achieve a particular result, then there's, I think, a little bit more, and we've seen this with the military population, a little bit more willingness to begin to experiment with the techniques in order to achieve a particular result.
Now, E, I was discussing your coming on the show with someone yesterday, and they gave a very quick answer to that question, and what they said was, because it's we weren't able to figure out how to monetize it. What do you say to that answer?
Well, there's a lot of people who have monetized it to some extent. But I think that the bigger issue is that, to a large degree, the training of the people that are doing a lot of the education in that field is, it really isn't directed in a therapeutic way as much as it is in kind of a generalized performance of the practices to kind of feel a little bit better no matter what you're doing in your life. So when we take it back out of that and we talk about applying it for specific circumstances like stress, I think it becomes a slightly different game.
Is this, you know, is this something that you see down the road becoming implemented into the military and is it already? I mean, I'm not, you know, up to knowledge of military practices in regards to yoga and meditation, but is this something that's, is it implemented already, or do you see it, you know, do you foresee it becoming integrated through our entire system?
Well, the interesting thing is that over the course of the last 15 years since we've been embroiled in our conflicts over in the Middle East, I think most people know that we've got this tremendous chronic stress epidemic, including post-traumatic stress, on our hands, with hundreds of thousands of our veterans really struggling mightily with these stress conditions. And as a result, the military and the VA have become more and more receptive to quote-unquote alternative practices as part of the mix. And so we're seeing more and more mindfulness, yoga, and meditation actually being brought into the active duty military components as well as the VA system, which is a really good thing. Our bootstrap system, which is really kind of the curriculum that underpins the book, Waging Inner Peace, takes that a little bit further in that rather than just performing the postures, it's really a measured and progressive curriculum that not only trains people in the techniques, but also helps them to understand the hows and whys of what's going on behind the scenes.
And the bootstraps, you know, the workshop to me, and Al and I are big fans, we should tell you, when I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking that every single VA should have this workshop kind of built into its curriculum on an ongoing basis. So when, you know, obviously our military returns home, I hear about these long lines of the VA and waiting for this and waiting for that. But this workshop is something that could be actively done at each VA on a daily basis, correct?
Oh, it absolutely can. And what you're talking about here is the long lines and the bureaucracy and all of that is actually one of the inspirations that fueled the creation of the program to begin with.
Now,
what we saw was that, you know, there were literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of our troops and veterans who simply weren't getting the help that they needed, either because of bureaucracy or because of geography or any number of other things. And so what we set out to do was to create a system that could be performed actually in the privacy of one's own home, so no matter where you lived or what, how long the lines were at the VA, you would be able to access it. Now, with that said, we've also, and this is the good news, is that we have a bootstrap instructor training program, and we've had some folks from the VA come through it, and there are a few different VAs around the country, one notably in South Dakota, who are beginning to offer the bootstrap program as part of their other treatment modalities. So I think we're making some really significant movement in this regard.
Now, E, that sounds great. Now, what is holding up them setting it up and doing it in all of them?
Well, that's a good question. and I think that the wheels of bureaucracy turn very, very slowly. And the truth of the matter is, at least this has been my experience, even going up to Washington and talking to folks, is that the VA is made up of a whole bunch of very, very well-intentioned people who are wrapped very securely in mind-numbing amounts of red tape. So the adoption of new programs depends on a whole host of things, from scientific double-blind studies to bidding practices to ensure that the money of the U.S. government is spent in the most helpful way, and on and on. So it's just it's a really, really Herculean process, as I think it really is any time you're dealing with the U.S. government in this kind of way.
Yeah, you know, it fascinates me because I'm in the treatment world, and, you know, we are strong believers in empirically validated research, and we don't practice, the Hazleton-Betty Ford Network, we don't practice anything that hasn't been empirically validated to be effective. So there's a lot of similarities. The thing that's fascinating to me, though, is, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but the simplicity of this program in its nature and the immediate benefits. This isn't something, and I know that, you know, you've created a structured program that would guarantee these empirical results if, you know, we get enough researchers to grab onto it. But just the simplicity of integrating yoga and mindfulness into your daily life, I in my experience in working with patients, is there's an immediate, this isn't something that we see 8 to 14 weeks down the road, although it gets better, but I think there's an immediate improvement once it's integrated.
We've seen that exact same thing. We've had veteran after veteran kind of reporting back to us that within a week, not only did they feel different, but their family members and the people around them have noticed changes in them. And I think the ironic thing in all of this is that in our society today, we have really kind of put complexity and complex solutions on a pedestal. And when anything is overly simplistic, there's something in our minds that we go, well, that can't be really all of that powerful because it's just too simple to make a difference. But, you know, the funny thing is, and Matt, I'm sure you're well aware of this, is in stress conditions, complexity of processing our environment is the problem.
Correct, yeah.
And so when we come back to a solution that really embraces simplicity, it really is kind of, in a certain way, an antidote for the stress itself.
Yeah.
Now, E, one of the things I hear you saying is that because of the red tape and possibly funding and things like that, it's taking a lot longer than maybe it should to get it out to as many people as possible. On the way in here, I was speaking to an educational consultant, and we were talking about a recent post about mindfulness being used in schools in lieu of detention. So rather than being sent to detention and being punished, they're going in and they're learning mindfulness, and they said the overall benefit has been that disruptive behavior and so on is down considerably in that school because they've adopted this. Is the answer that we just need to start younger?
I think that's part of it, you know, and for my money anyway, there's something of a hole in our education system where we teach our kids, we're kind of in the data cramming business, if you think about it. All of our education is about getting more and more information in the mind, but one of the things that we don't spend a whole lot of time doing is helping people to master their minds so that they have control over what thoughts are arising or where their attention is being placed. But really, because of this, and especially if you think about the huge influence of that technology is beginning to have, not only on our kids but on all of us, we're creating a situation in which we really aren't very good at managing, this is the term that I use in the book anyway, is managing our humanness. And the more that we can begin to become skillful at managing the mental and emotional aspects of ourselves directly, I think the better off we're all going to be in every aspect of our lives.
You use the term humanness, and to me it's a word that I'm not that familiar with, and I'm not sure really what to make of it. In the book you use it, but what do you mean by humanness?
Well, it really has to do with the fact that I think, and I kind of stumbled into this term and began using it, in that in my work, both here in my wellness center in Phoenix and with the troops and veterans all around the world, one of the things that I find is that we have this idea that at some point, if I work hard enough and try hard enough, I'm going to be able to prevent the arising of negative and unpleasant emotions, and I'm going to be able to stem any kind of unhelpful thinking processes and habits and all of that. And the long and the short of it is that being human is kind of a messy business. And you're always, no matter how hard you try and no matter how much practice and therapy and other things you do, we're always going to be subject to the ups and downs of life on the inside part of our world and the outside part. And so when I talk about managing our humanness, it really has to do with coming into a more functional relationship with the inevitable ups and downs of our mental and emotional lives.
Now, we have a listener question that's come in, and E, what they're asking is, this one reads, both of my teens continually talk about being stressed out from the expectations of school. I have been studying the issue online and see that this is a real problem nationwide, with 6 out of 10 teens stating the same thing. Would your book be appropriate for 15 to 17-year-olds, or should I read it and share the strategies with them? And again, this is from Helen in Oregon, and thank you, Helen, for that question.
It's a really great question, and I think one that's becoming ever more important, because I have some teenage nieces and nephews, and I look at the pressures that they're being put under, and I compare that to my own upbringing back when I was a teenager, and it's mind-numbing the amount of external pressures and expectations that are on these kids these days. With that said, the thing that's, I think, the most helpful about the book, Waging Inner Peace, is it actually includes the entire 10-week bootstrap process, which walks people step by step in a measured way through the entire curriculum, and then gives them daily practices that they can do, each one taking less than an hour a day, that helps them to not only kind of lower the daily experience of stress, but also to become more and more skilled at managing the ways in which the stress arises. And so it's really very applicable to anybody who I would say is probably, again, it's going to depend upon the child, right? But anybody who's 14 to 15 years old or older, particularly if it's done along with an adult went through the process with them.
So what I hear you saying is that the process of the Bootstrap Workshop and the book it's applicable to people who have had serious trauma, obviously, and those who are afflicted with PTSD. But it's also really good for people who haven't had an obvious trauma but do live with a lot of stress in their lives, which is basically, you know, all of us.
Absolutely, that's right. Because the interesting thing, from my perspective anyway, is that when I first put the Bootstrap program together, and the whole thing was set off by a panic phone call I got from the mother of a U.S. Marine whose son, who had just been diagnosed with PTSD, wanted to know if I could help. And she was a student of mine for a long time. And that was the thing that kicked off the whole Bootstrap system. So when I put it together, I really had a very narrow focus. Now, once it got into the hands of the troops and veterans, the thing that we noticed almost immediately was that family members, including children and wives and spouses and uncles and aunts and the whole gamut, began doing the program along with the veterans, or sometimes independent of the veterans, and they were all getting immense benefit. And obviously, they weren't subject to the same kind of traumatic experiences, just had everyday levels of stress, sometimes high, sometimes low, but everybody was uniformly benefiting. And that was the impetus to put it into book form so that we could make it available to more and more people.
Well, similar to your answer, I agree that stress is stress, and I think we have a very similar process in how we experience it, both in our own company and our home. But do you feel how we respond to it differs immensely? Maybe this is even an automatic process. Does the book directly look at this?
In terms of, can you restate that one more time? Because I'm not really 100% sure on what you were asking.
No, I'm just asking is that, you know, do you believe that maybe this is, it's sort of an automatic process in the way in which we are dealing with our stress, that we get to a point to where we're sort of automated and we're just doing the same thing over and over again?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other part of that is that not only is it fairly, I'll use the word, habituated in terms of the way that we deal with our stress, is that that habituation can differ from person to person. So some people might deal by trying to run away. Other people might deal by distracting themselves. Other people might deal by trying to kind of muscle through. But independent of the, I don't mean this in a negative way, but let's put it this way, the less than helpful way that we deal with it, the solutions to getting that out of control stress response under control are strangely similar, independent of how I'm habituated to dealing with my stress, and also independent of how that stress has kind of befallen me, whether it's a traumatic event or just the everyday stress of being a law enforcement officer, as an example.
So we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, E, I want to ask you about the other side of this, and is there a negative effect to making people too relaxed? We'll be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. We're with Eric Walberstein and his book, Waging Inner Peace, we're discussing. I left us with a question in my head, Eric, and I think about the military, and when we're teaching people to become more parasympathetic dominant, more in a relaxed state through the Bootstraps workshop, and I think that it's valuable for about 90 to 95% of the people, but for people that are still going back into the Middle East and are still integrating into these dangerous environments, is it a benefit or could it be a negative if you're able to de-stress and be too calm in situations?
Well, I think that's a really great question, and what we've tried to do is engineer a program that doesn't necessarily just push people over into the parasympathetic dominant space and keep them there, but to allow them to and their nervous systems to function naturally, which has to do with swinging back and forth as appropriate between a nice, calm, relaxed parasympathetic state when it's appropriate, which is most of the time, and then allowing the pendulum to swing the other way into the sympathetic state when that's appropriate. So rather than really just trying to kind of mellow everybody out and calm them down, what our effort is to, first of all, step one is to help them understand what's going on within them when it comes to their chronic stress condition, and then arm them with specific tools and techniques that will allow them to normalize the system, which doesn't mean to numb it out so it's always over in a relaxed parasympathetic state, but to allow it to function freely and swing in whatever direction is necessary for the particular environment they find themselves in.
That's a beautiful answer because, you know, my background in learning how to control the parasympathetic nervous system to me has been really beneficial and excellent. But the issue, it still remains out there that there are certain situations where you need to be not in fight or flight, but enough to where you can respond to a situation. And I really haven't seen that much research or not that many people, you know, except for you, who has recognized that, you know, that we need to be able to evaluate the environment and then make the actual be in the right state that matches our surroundings versus just be, you know, relaxed.
Right. And the first lesson actually in Bootstrap has to do with helping people to understand the stress response a little bit more. And we make a distinction between, you know, good stress or eustress and bad stress or distress, and how stress is, in fact, a natural and necessary part of living a vital life. Like, we go to the gym, we stress our muscles, we get healthier. We go to school, we stress our minds, we get smarter. So stress in the right doses is a natural and necessary part of our lives. And so that's really kind of woven through the entire Bootstrap process.
Well, the book emphasizes just how significant stress plays a role in our world. In fact, you quote that 90% of primary care visits are a result of stress. Can you explain how this number can be so high?
Well, when I first came across that, and that number is from the United States Centers for Disease Control, I just about fell out of my chair.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, I thought it was a typo because that just didn't make any sense to me how 90% of the people going to doctors could be due to stress. But I began to dig a little bit more, and then I started doing a little bit of a critical thinking. And it turns out that, first of all, it is true. And secondly, it makes sense when we consider the fact that stress primarily affects the nervous system, and the nervous system is central headquarters for everything in your entire being, from your immune system to your respiratory system to your circulatory system, and on and on and on it goes. So when you take central headquarters and you put it into a tailspin, it's going to have an immensely detrimental effect on every part of our health and well-being.
And for me, you know, a lot of times I get patients or people who have really been able to handle stress a lot in their life and up until their early 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. And then all of a sudden it almost sneaks through the back door, it feels like. And they think they're doing fine and start having panic attacks and start having, you know, stressors. And you know, these are the type of people I think that Waging Inner Peace really would be effective with.
We've seen that for sure. You know, there's this old idea about a midlife crisis, and I think that sometimes that crisis can be somewhat existential in nature, but other times I think it's what you're pointing to, Matt, is the fact that people, there's just this cumulative amount of stress that people begin to labor under without the skills necessary to really begin to manage it effectively, and as a result, they begin to experience symptoms that before were completely absent.
Yeah. Now, E, I think right now that the three of us all agree, but Is there a simple and easy way that we can get this information to our communities and our society so that they can respond? How can they respond best to this so that we can really start making a difference?
Well, I really think that the first step is to make an acknowledgement that we're all simmering in a level of stress. And I'm not just talking about troops and veterans here, but our society as a whole, including our children, and it's a level of stress that is not only unacceptable, but is for the long term unsustainable if we want to live healthy, vital lives. The second piece has to do with something that I don't think is really talked about enough, but is really the core of everything I do, and that is that stress really doesn't come from the outside as much as it comes from our dysfunctional way that we relate to what comes from outside. So we can, if we have the right kind of understanding, engage in the right kind of practices, literally armor ourselves in a way that allows us to be in the midst of the same stressful workplace or relationship or, God forbid, war setting, that allows us to really nimbly manage our way through that without becoming detrimentally stressed over the long term.
Now, E, while we're talking about this level of stress, and I think we're acknowledging that it's increased, we have a listener question, and this one actually came in yesterday. This one reads, do you believe the HAARP, H-A-A-R-P, towers have affected people's stress levels? And then it says, research by Dr. Nick Bedich and it looks like Jeannie Manning uncovered Air Force documents revealing that the HAARP, which stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, I think you know that, but our listeners will need to know, that system has the ability to manipulate and disturb human mental processes through pulsed radio frequency radiation over large geographical areas.
I'm going to have to declare ignorance on this one. I have never heard of the HAARP towers. And so I have really no knowledge or expertise in that area, so I'm going to have to sadly decline any kind of answer to that one.
What I think our listeners can do is to maybe Google it, because what I did when this question came in is I Googled it, and there is some information out there. I just thought that you may have a little more information in regards to that. But again, for listeners, if you're wondering what that is, go ahead and Google it and take a gander for yourself.
So, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is when I think of military, you think of specific personalities and people that go into the military, and we all deal with stress, you know, in different ways. And I really like about the book that it doesn't talk in generalities. It talks, you know, in true step-by-step processes, and they're explained very thoroughly throughout the book. Was your intention to standardize it for the military or for really all folks?
When I was putting the bootstrap system together, which again predates the writing of the book by about 5 or 6 years, my intention was exclusively to tailor a program that would be optimally accessible to the military personnel, veterans, and the military mindset, which, you know, as you can imagine, exists at the polar opposite of the spectrum from the typical yoga mindset. And so what I really did, and this is true even what I do here in my wellness center in Phoenix, is I try to divorce the cultural background and baggage that sometimes comes with yoga and meditative practices, and really look at the techniques, or again, I'll use that word, the technologies of the mind and the body that can be used directly independent of any kind of proclivity towards spirituality, religion, or any other type of thing. So my intention was to make it optimally accessible to the military audience by, I guess I could use the word, sanitizing it in a certain way, so that it is really just step-by-step replicable techniques that can be done by anybody. And the accident was that also made it really accessible to just about anybody else, independent of their background.
Now, E, in reading your book, you discuss multitasking and its role in our lives. Now, I need to plead guilty myself to this one, but you even go as far as to say that multitasking is a myth. What do you mean by that?
Well, they did a study a few years back at MIT, and this is where this this idea came from. And the fact of the matter is that our attention really can only focus on one thing at a time. And the thing that we call multitasking really is better referred to as rapid toggling. What we're doing is we're changing channels back and forth from this to that so quickly it seems like we're doing many things at the same time. But this is exactly why texting and driving is such a bad idea, because the moment that you have your eyes on the phone is a moment when you're not attending to the cars around you. So when we think that we're multitasking, what we're really doing is switching channels back and forth. And while that doesn't seem perhaps like a problem, the real issue is that rapid toggling and changing from this to this to this to this to this in our mind puts an immense amount of stress on the nervous system. And so it really begins to exacerbate whatever any other kinds of stressors that we have and can lead to us feeling chronically stressed.
Well, it sounds like I better sign up for boot camp then.
I think we all probably could benefit from that a little bit. And that's the funny thing about technology, right, is it beckons you to begin to do this kind of, quote, multitasking, end quote. And as a result, this is one of the reasons why not only our teens but the rest of us are feeling more and more stressed in life.
Yeah, we've got another listener question that's tapping into this same thing. The writer says, I'm the typical single parent working multiple jobs to keep the bills paid. I know my young ones are being affected by my stress. I feel like I'm failing them miserably as I'm so tired all the time and often impatient with them. When you talk about dealing with stress in your book, how do you address situations for people like myself who are just tapped out and trying to keep things going?
Well, the most challenging thing with stress is that when we are stressed, the last thing we need is another thing to do. Unfortunately, in order to get our stress under control, we kind of have to make that investment. You know, there's this funny old Zen saying that says, you should sit and meditate 20 minutes every day unless you're too busy, and then meditate for an hour. And it's kind of like that, is that ironically, the more stress we get, the less prone we are to take care of ourselves, and then the worse we feel, and then the less prone we feel to take care of ourselves, and it becomes a vicious cycle. So what my effort has been is to, and this is why in the Bootstrap system and in the book as well, we've really tried to make the process very manageable and to fit into anybody's busy life. And if people are willing to make this daily investment of as little as, you know, 30 to 40 minutes, immense shifts can happen as far as what's going on in the nervous system, how we feel, and to your listener's point, how we respond to those around us, including our children, our family members, our bosses, and the rest of it.
You know, to me, I've always, you know, loved the connection that we're learning of mental health and being more preventative with the stuff. And I understand that, you know, our country, big pharma is in a lot of control of a lot of things that get decided. And so, you know, the money really isn't in prevention, but it's in the cure. But these concepts that you're going over in the book and through your workshop, they're truly preventative. It's truly preventative medicine that doesn't have the attachment of big costs and big pharma. My question to you really is there an age where we could start, you know, kind of making a push in early education for these concepts?
I think they're absolutely not all, there's not only an age, and depending upon how you package it, that could be all the way down into, you know, the early K through 12. But with that said, it's the bigger issue, I think, here is that psychologically, everybody values a cure way more than they value prevention. Because this is why people smoke, right? Because they don't think that it's not going to happen to me. And so when we make an investment in prevention, it's kind of an investment that's being done on faith. And so it's a little bit harder psychologically to get people behind it. And I think that's a big driving force of this. But to the point of bringing this into the educational system, I think that's critically important. And in fact, I'll make this comment is, here's a confession for you. Some days I wake up and I don't feel like brushing my teeth. But you know what? I still brush my teeth because I know dental hygiene is important. The funny thing is that mental hygiene is also important. And many of us don't make the same kind of investment in our minds, which is arguably many more times more important than we do with our teeth every day. So we can build these little small little habits that take care of kind of mental hygiene or mental fitness into the habits of our younger generation, then that's going to set them up to be much more successful and well-adjusted in the long run.
So now, as we're talking about stress, you know, one of the questions is, you know, so how does one become a stress expert? Now, if we were talking about a sport, it would be, okay, if I'm into baseball and if I do it enough, I can become an expert at it. But I don't think that that would work the same thing with stress. So, you know, most people would think that this would be a book that would come out of the mental health field. But you took a different route. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, for me, and I mentioned this briefly at the beginning, is this really all came out of my personal experience. When I was 17 years old, I was in a parking garage in Sacramento, California, and I was attacked by a group of what I'll call thugs who gave me a pretty good beating, took my wallet. But as far as muggings go, it really wasn't all that bad. They had knives, but I wasn't stabbed or anything like that. And I got up, brushed myself off, and thought I was really no worse for the wear, and I'd heal up in about a week. Lo and behold, what really happened was that for a good 10, 15 years after that, dark and closed spaces would send me into kind of a low-grade panic. People who looked like my attackers, I would well up with a sense of kind of really significant anxiety in me. I didn't sleep very well. I had some anger management problems. And for years and years and years, I didn't realize that I was dealing with a traumatic stress injury. And so it was really this firsthand experience of living with this pernicious, consistent experience of stress that was really affecting not only how I felt day to day, but my relationships and my work life and the rest of it, that steered me to really kind of working through a solution. And for whatever reason, I stumbled into the world of meditation and mindfulness and yoga and began really kind of enthusiastically consuming the different wisdom from those traditions, experimenting with the different practices that really led me to kind of create a cocktail that worked effectively, first in my own body, but then with my students here in Phoenix, and then ultimately Bootstrap and the troops and veterans around the world. So it was really kind of an organic process for me rather than an educational process in the more traditional sense.
And our listeners know about Waging Inner Peace, but as far as your wellness center in Phoenix, will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's called Yogapura, and it's a yoga and wellness center. We do meditation, we do teacher trainings, and we do a vast number of workshops on all sorts of different techniques. And we see about, I think, somewhere around 2,500 folks a month.
Wow.
So it's a pretty thriving little place. But I think more importantly for my work at this point and going forward is this is really, I like to think of it as my research and development center. It's here where I develop and test out curriculums and techniques and practices in small groups and individuals that I'm working with. And the ones that seem to work the best are the ones that we then begin to offer to a wider audience, either online or in workshops and other things all around the country. So that's kind of what our work is based on around here.
And I know that you had mentioned there's a lot of bureaucracy and red tape through the military, but have you been able to locally in Phoenix find enough good people and, more importantly, center schools, areas around there that are willing to kind of allow you the space to expand and do this research and to get into some of these places?
We, for the most part, our primary effort is connecting directly with individuals. With that said, we also have the Bootstrap Instructor Training Program that I mentioned earlier that is really designed to create these Bootstrap in ambassadors, if you will, that go out and teach the system in VA centers and in other yoga meditation centers and hospitals and homes and all across the country. And so what we found was that because of the challenges associated with trying to butt heads with the U.S. government, we've really decided to kind of go directly to those who are suffering mm-hmm. and to work with those people who are interested in helping them as teachers or facilitators.
Now, if somebody is listening and if they want to be a Bootstrap facilitator, say for their program, how would they best get in touch with you?
The best way to find out more information on Bootstrap is to go to our website, which is bootstrapusa.com. And it's there that not only will you learn about the program, you'll learn about the instructor training initiative, but also, and maybe most importantly, for all troops and veterans of the U.S. military, the 10-week online program is there and 100% free for any of them who want to avail themselves to it.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. I was thinking the same thing. Now, some of the feedback that we get on this show generally goes to an area when we talk about success stories. So we've only got a couple of minutes. Give us one of your favorite success stories.
Well, my favorite one is a gentleman named Bill. And Bill is a veteran of the first Gulf War, walked away from that with a case of post-traumatic stress disorder and a traumatic brain injury. He'd been seeing folks down at the VA here in Phoenix for a better part of a decade when I first met him. He was on a cocktail of pharmaceuticals and in and out of various different talk therapies and such. And he was actually doing pretty good. He came through the Bootstrap system, and after about, I think it was, he was 3 weeks in, 3 or 4 weeks in, he went back down to the VA and sat down with his therapist. And his therapist, almost immediately after he sat down, said, "What have you been doing?" I said, what? He thought he was in trouble. And he said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Your whole demeanor has changed. The pace of your speaking has changed. You're not shaking like you used to be. What have you been doing?" And he shared with his therapist about the Bootstrap program and how that had literally shifted how not only he was feeling, but more importantly, and this was the big takeaway, it was a big aha moment for me, he said for the first time he felt actually empowered to manage his own stress, as opposed to being somebody that the doctors and psychiatrists and others worked on. So it was the understanding and the techniques that he himself could imply when he was having stress episodes that really made the biggest difference for him. And that was just such a really heartwarming story, and it's totally one of my favorites.
Oh, I thought you were going to close.
Well, E, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show. We also want to have our listeners know that the book is called Waging Inner Peace. We look forward to having you back on the show, and thank you so much. And for those listeners, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday, October 10th, when our special guest, Justin Luke Riley, will discuss the organization he founded, Young People in Recovery.
And if you missed or you want to share one of our shows with your friends, please visit our archives of past shows at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of The Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality and thankfulness through self-discovery.
And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word.
And as we close most shows, and this one it has even more because of the fact that we've been talking about our humanness, be good humans and be with us again next week for Answers for the Family.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.